One of the great voices in the history of this station, though he's never been on enough to suit me, is John St. Augustine. You've had shows here, you've had shows elsewhere, you're a writer, you're a motivational speaker, you're a friend of Jen Weigel's, and you're a good guy, John. How are you?
I'm very good.
Welcome in the studio.
Good to see
it's a
you
nice
again.
Time to be here. You collaborated with, you know, because you're a friend, I'll read anything. If you had sent in a book saying, Rick, I've written a book about my old gym shoes, I'd say, well, John, I'd be happy to take a look at it. Yeah. This thing, written in collaboration with a man who I don't know named David Hirsch, is called 20th Century Dads, A Father's Journey to Break the Cycle of Father Absence. We also have David, you're on the phone with us, aren't you?
I am. Yep.
What was it like to work with this man, John St. Augustine?
It was an experience. Let me say it's a very positive experience, Rick.
Oh, I'll bet. You know, the book fascinated me because I do believe both of you guys are right about this. The trouble of father absence is gotten much, much, much worse. You, David, are a child of divorce, right? As I've read in the book, your grandfather Sam was an important role model in your life. But this has been a cause of yours for two decades, has it not?
It has, yeah.
Why?
We had our fifth child, my wife and I. I was looking for fatherhood resources and was committed to being a better dad than I experienced. And I ran across these statistics, some of which we included in the book, some 24 million kids growing up without their dads, 4 out of every 10 across America. And I thought, well, somebody should do something about it.
And what did you decide to do?
Well, the first thing I did was to organize a community leaders briefing at the Union League Club in Chicago. 120 people showed up and validated what we were talking about, and that was sort of the impetus for getting the ball rolling.
Well, the gist of the book is that it is a ride that you took from Santa Monica, bike ride. You're not a professional bike rider. You're a professional financial guy. John, when did you meet David? Mm. How did this sort of author's relationship start?
It's everything to me is symbiotic at some point, you know,
sure.
If you pay attention. And I get approached a lot being in the media for 20 years on all kind of projects and all kind of lunches and all kind of dinners. And I can only eat so much, you know. I mean, you can only go so many pitch meetings and go, okay, great.
Yeah.
And I've written two books myself.
Sure.
It is a daunting task. It's not for the faint of heart. It takes a lot.
You know, your book, I must interrupt, yes. Your book, Every Moment Matters,
yeah.
Is memorable to me.
I remember
memorable
we had a good
me.
Talk about
yes,
that.
Yes, we did.
And so when you're putting yourself on a line and you want to do that in literary form, I don't think most people get it. Everybody, I want to write a book. Well, that's great, but here's how it kind of works. So anyway, Jennifer Weigel calls me one day, our gal pal Jen,
friend, yeah.
And she says, you got to meet this guy, David Hirsch. And I said, I don't want to meet another guy lunch.
I have too many guys.
I got too many guys. And so anyway, I said, okay. She goes, just come to lunch. And I said, where's it? I said, the Union League. I said, do they have a buffet? Yeah. Okay, then I'm in. So we went there, and I met David, and he's just an upstanding, fine gentleman and spit and polish. And we were sitting there for a few minutes, and we started talking about his life and this ride that he took, this honor ride that he took, 2,300 miles in 21 days. And one of the things I wrote in my book, Every Moment Matters, was that I did this walk, a 1,000-mile round
right,
trip. So,
right.
So I had, there was a kinship there.
Sure.
And I thought, oh, he's doing something bigger than him. And that mattered to me. So that's kind of how the ball started rolling. And when he talked about writing a book, I said, this is, you know, this is a good thing. And especially what you're talking about, it resonates with me. And then he said, well, it needs to be done by Father's Day this year.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well... But lo and behold, through the magic of all kind of details being handled, we got there, and it was quite an experience.
You too, with this book, I imagine, have really struck a nerve here, haven't you, David?
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't say that our relationship got off to a really good start, though. And John,
yeah.
I mentioned this to you.
Feel free. Go ahead.
Yeah, I kind of glossed over that, Dave. Go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead. I want the truth on this show.
The Union League Club, having a nice dinner, lunch. And, you know, I was actually there to meet with Jen Weigel to talk about another book idea I've had for like 15 years.
Mm.
And she brings this guy along, and I don't know him.
This guy.
I don't know him, really. And, you know, nice enough guy.
Nice enough guy.
Nice enough.
Go ahead.
the conversation switches from me and Jen to me and John, and John's peppering me with questions about, you know, the ride that I did and a little bit about my background and, you know, this sort of a dysfunctional relationship I've had with my dad. And he says to me something very, I thought, out of bounds. He said something along the lines, he said, this dysfunctional relationship you've had with your dad over the last 40-something years has really been a gift. And I'm thinking, who is this guy? He barely knows me. And he's telling me, you know, this highly dysfunctional relationship, this slippery slope that I've been on for decades and decades, is a gift. I'm thinking a gift is got a bow on it. It's something you ask for. It's something people give you to please you. This is the furthest thing from a gift. So I say, well, with all due respect, John, you really have no idea how difficult this relationship has been. Well, he goes on to say, well, I didn't mean it in the sense that it's a gift with a bow on it, but you wouldn't be the person you are today, you wouldn't be the husband you are today, you wouldn't be the father you are today, you wouldn't be advocating like you have been for 19 plus years for kids and dads if it wasn't for that relationship. And it was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, there's an insight.
It's like a light bulb clicks on.
Yeah.
And it was very profound. And that was sort of the turning point in our conversation. And we decided to get together for a separate lunch, a follow-up lunch. And, you know, one thing led to the next.
Sure.
Oh, maybe we could do this.
Well, it's an incredibly provocative and, I think, inspiring book, too. But, you know, what occurs to me, and you do get into this a little bit, certainly, and I'm in my 60s now, and the way I grew up, I had a decent, more than decent relationship with my dad. But but this isn't an era where all of the so-called role models for dads are these, I will frankly say, these freaks on TV, the father knows best kind of freaks, which were not teaching anything, to my mind, practical in life. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, I mean, I listen. We all live now by the ELS, the electronic life support system, and we don't know how to function, I think, many ways without it.
Right.
And finding real human beings who are doing really great work in the world that you can kind of latch onto. We're not that far apart in age. I had it. You had it. David had it. You know, you can see his uncle or his grandfather was a big influence.
We've had these men. Yeah.
Right. We've had these men in our lives that we said, whoa, that resonates with me. And I don't even think I know that has dropped off dramatically for a lot of different reasons. Technology's done
economics.
Economically, all these factors have fractured that platform of dad. And to me, as a father myself, I feel responsible to do something somewhere about it. Even though I can't help everybody, there's something you can do about something. So that was the big attraction. And you know, David's a number guy. All the statistics in here will curl your hair.
Oh, it's so sad. The 24 million kids father is heartbreaking.
And so I always say to people when I go out and talk, how you were born is not nearly as important as why. Most people never get to why, Rick. Yeah. They're still stuck on how. And how will get you nowhere. But why is what we're supposed to figure out. And I believe deeply that this book is a lot about the why. David, you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, you can't change the past.
Right.
You don't want to have that be the baggage of father absence is what I think of it as.
Yeah.
Carrying it around, maybe even passing it on. Be very deliberate about, you know, the path you want to be on. I always say emulate the role models, right, the positive role models in your life, and live vicariously from the bad ones, right? Don't have to do that yourself.
Good point. We got to take a break. David, I'm thrilled that you're on the phone with us. David Hirsch. John St. Augustine is in here with me because he's so comfortable in a radio studio.
That's right.
He do this for a living.
You think?
Their book, 20th Century Dads, A Father's Journey to Break the Cycle of Father Absence, when you just get stunned by that statistic that there are 24 million kids in this country with no father. We'll be right back. I got to tell you, Bears fans, grab a copy of the Chicago Tribune at Jewel Osco this Sunday. Well, it's not too late. You got a little while. To collect your 2016 Chicago Bears Fathead Tradables. Collect all 8 now through October 30th. We'll be right back. The title of the book is 21st Century Dads. The website, very cool, nice, handsome, effective, useful website, is 21st Century Dads. That's the numbers 21ST, as in 21st, then centurydads.org. It is written by David Hirsch with John St. Augustine. John is here. David's on the phone. The shocking figure, I will tell you again, is 24 million kids with no father. As John said, the reasons for that are myriad, economic, all sorts of other reasons. But, David, I want to ask you if you can sort of help define, because 21st century dads are nothing like 19th century dads, or 20th century dads, are there?
Yeah, I think the expectations are just different. Society is shifting. The gender roles are more equal.
Right.
And with as many women in the workforce, guys have had to take on additional responsibility or roles. And, we're sort of caught between what our dad's or our grandpa's expectations were and what is expected of us today. So I don't want to say it's worse or it's harder, but they're just different. Right. And
yeah,
they need to make the shift. The guys need to.
Well,
make
I do. Shift. You know, I think to myself that, you know, my dad, lovely man, great newspaper man, nice father. You know, he never came to see me play in any sports. I mean, it was like, no, he was working. You know, he's not going to leave to go see me play basketball or anything else. And in this era, John St. Augustine, dads seem to be more hands-on, but just showing up is not really what it's all about, is it?
I think there's a lot more to it than
that.
There's no
too.
Doubt. There's a,
well,
there's...
You guys make the point in the book that it's not just a matter of being around.
Well, you know, I use the example. You know, my dad, great guy. You know, I was talking to my daughter on the way over here, and I told her, I've been on a plane more the last month than my dad was his entire life. He worked at Six Corners right up here on Northwest Side. He would walk to the bank and walk back, and it was his every day was exactly the same. And at 6:30, when Star Trek was on, I was the remote control, and I stood next to the TV and changed the channel. And sometimes it was a difficult relationship, but that's how the times were. And I think as we evolve in life, I think, especially as a father, you're either evolving or you're revolving and doing what they did. And I think it takes a shift in consciousness to make some effort, not just to show up, but to actually be there, not just physically, but as David points out, emotionally, spiritually, financially.
Exactly.
The way
that's one of the points I got out of your book, too, David, is it is not just a matter of showing up. I mean, though that is a good thing.
Sure.
I think
it's a start.
Does show support.
Sure.
But there has to that's the sort of icing on what might be the father cake. David, do you agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that the way I've articulated it that we've included in the book is that the old expectation is that dads need to be a good financial provider. And, you know, we need to do that.
Sure.
But the higher level, the expectation is that, you know, we need to be present physically. We need to be present emotionally, which, you know, most men are not emotional creatures. And then I think that the highest level, not like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but, you know, if you're a complete person, right, you're firing on all four quadrants, you know, you're also the spiritual leader in your family's life. And, you know, we've actually created a tool, an assessment tool, a self-assessment tool for dads.
Yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
Free of charge. Guys can go online in the privacy of their own home or office, you know, in 20 minutes get some immediate feedback on their parenting, on their fathering. And, you know, if you're honest with yourself as opposed to projecting where you want to be, you know, each of us has some areas for growth or improvement. For me, it was being more emotional, right? Communicating
what
my feelings are and relating to not only my sons but my daughters. And then for the most part, for the better part of the 33 years that we've been married, I wasn't the spiritual leader of my family, but thank God that my wife was. And it wasn't until about 5 or 6 years ago that, you know, that became...
What was your... Let me ask you, David, what was your awakening then? What was your spiritual awakening?
The short story is a very close friend of about a dozen years who was the president of the National Center for Fathering, Peter Spokes was his name, died of leukemia at age 57. And we were both business guys. He went from business to not-for-profit. And he was one of the guys that I would have these conversations with, you know, a handful of times a year. We'd always talk about he had 6 kids, I had 5. They were a little bit older, 5 to 10 years older. And he would just be sharing stories about what was going on in his life. And I was the direct beneficiary of all that. So I learned a lot about being a dad from other role models like him, in addition to my grandfather and so many others. So when he passed away, I felt compelled to go to his funeral in Kansas City. And, you know, the eulogies that the priests from Minneapolis, where he grew up, and the priest in Kansas City, where he lived for, you know, 15 years, were very eloquent, very personal. But it wasn't until two of his children, two of his six children got up and eulogized their dad. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have that type of relationship with my kids. I need to do something about that, right? That was what, like, woke me up, if you will. I remember meeting with a priest here in the Chicago area, and he, the most direct thing he said to me, the thing that I'll never forget, he goes, it took you the first 49 years of your life to get to this point. Let's not be hasty about making a decision. So he gave me some books to read, Father Brito at St. Paul of the Cross in Park Ridge. And he said, why don't you do some reading, go to the library, check out some books. I did, and I got back with him a couple months later. I said, I feel just as strongly now. He goes, well, maybe you're ready. Maybe this is the time. So I went through the RCIA program and over 9 months and, you know, became a committed Catholic.
Wow. Fantastic. Fantastic. How do you feel, John Zeno? You seem spiritually as a dad.
I'm way the opposite of David. You know,
you guys do make a great
well,
team,
that's what
I
it
must
is,
tell
you. Know,
you.
It is. It's kind of like thunder and lightning, you know. So, you know, I grew up here in the city, and my parents went to the church once a year.
Yeah.
Christmas Eve. That was it. And I started out at St. Ed's, and then I went over to the Presbyterian church, and I kind of hit a couple Baptist church. You know, I kind of got a smattering of things. And for me, my spirituality always came in the outside, the world around me. It was kind of like I was in
the
church all
the
time. Absolutely.
Yeah,
you know, from people and experiences. And over the years, I've spent a lot of time with Native American folks and just enthralled with them. And so all this stuff really played an impact on me. And there was a guy at the Irving Park Presbyterian Church. It exists. I don't think it's a Presbyterian church anymore. His name was Reverend B.G. Sills. And he looked like Teddy Roosevelt. This was in the mid-70s. Yeah. He wore a white, full-length white suit of some kind with boots on. And he would just bring it down every Sunday morning. I don't remember anything he said, but I remember how he said it. And it had such an impact on me about leadership and fatherhood and who we are and we're our brother's keepers and this is what we need to do with our lives. And so this project was so – this may be the perfect time to say this because I know David may be aware of this. So about a month ago, I went and spoke at a prison in Michigan.
Yeah.
And it had been about 15 years since I was at that very prison. And some weird circumstances put me in Michigan. I don't go up there much anymore. I used to live there for 20 years.
Right, I'm back here.
And I went to walk into this prison. I was talking about a lot of what we talk about in this book. And Rick, 75 to 80% of those guys in there, exact working models for this project.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them came up to me afterward and said, I am like, even though I didn't know my dad, everybody told me I was like him, so I became him.
Yeah.
So without that rudder, without that balance, without that counterweight, it's almost like it's a done deal, and then you got to wait till some guy shows up while you're in prison and say, "Let me ask you a question. Here's all you need to know. Do you want your kids in the cell next to you?"
Yep, exactly.
Because that's what this
I
is.
Know, because that's a cycle. That's a
exactly.
cycle. I'm talking until we got 20 more minutes. 21st Century Dads, the collaborators David Hirsch and John St. Augustine. A Father's Journey to Break the Cycle of Father Absence. If you buy this book, you will become a better father. I can almost guarantee that. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I have 10 more minutes with John St. Augustine, who is sitting across from me, and David Hirsch, who is somewhere. He's on the phone, but he's somewhere not in the studio. They are the collaborators on an important book, 21st Century Dads, A Father's Journey to Break the Cycle of Father Absence. It is told in a very strong narrative following David's, and you're not a world-class athlete. Nevertheless, you rode a bike from Santa Monica to Chicago, David, and it's sort of, in the way it's structured, an adventure and the people you meet along the way, but also the meaning of that. The book is also, gentlemen, filled with so many approving, praiseful quotes from dozens of people, from Tom Dreesen to Phil Klein, the former police superintendent, Jim Edgar, the former governor of Illinois, Jonathan I, a friend of mine who's a best-selling author, Eboo Patel, who is the founder of Interfaith Youth Corps, Mike Singletary. How did you get all these guys? David, you want to answer that, or go ahead?
Absolutely. I know all of them on a first-name basis. I consider them some of my closer friends, and they've all been advocates in one way or another over the last 19 years, mostly in the name of the Illinois Fatherhood Initiative, and then more recently with the 21st Century Dads Foundation. And, you know, they get it. right? They're leaders in each of their respective fields. And, you know, let's just use Phil Klein as an example,
sure.
Former police commissioner, city of Chicago. You know, what I've realized doing these two dad honor rides, the first from Santa Monica to Chicago last summer and then this past summer from Boston to Chicago, we interact with a lot of first responders.
Sure.
Officers giving us the escorts in the morning and the afternoons as we're getting to the towns we're arriving in. And then we'd just pop into fire stations and, you know, strike up conversations with the firefighters. These guys, mostly guys, see what's going on in families when things are going bad, right?
Uh-huh.
Officers. And, you know, they just do amazing work on a day-to-day basis, right? They put their lives on the lines and, you know, dealing with a lot of the dysfunctionality that exists in society and with families. So we have a lot of respect for them. And I think, you know, guys like Phil Klein are, you know, part of the solution.
And Tom Dreesen, too. Good old Tommy, who had a strange childhood, as I know. A very, very strange childhood. He needed Tom, he's done well for himself, but he really needed a dad.
Well, we were just, I was just out for a few minutes with David last week. David does one of the obligatory huge golf outings to raise awareness and funds. And I got a chance to catch up to my old buddy Randy Hundley and talk with him a little bit. And I know that Tom Dreesen was there in fine form. And, you know, all through this process, knowing the men that have been with David on this journey, not so much on the bike physically, but for these 19, 20 years, you know, just made it all that more important. And you start to see, as I was telling you a little bit off the air, that, you know, most of the stuff that these people are doing never makes the headlines. The stuff that makes the headlines is the garbage that is the effect of the problem.
Exactly.
It doesn't fix the problem. It's just
it's a manifestation of the
problems. And so what this book's about and what David's work's been about all these years is really to offer up solutions and ideas and things through the stories of the people he meets, and that anybody at any time can make a huge difference in somebody's life. As simple as, you know, doing the big brother's big sister thing. Everybody talks about change in the world, but most people don't talk about changing themselves.
Right.
And when you can do that, then things change. So that's really, to me, was the gist of working with David on the book. One of the challenges collaborating was I was not on the ride with him.
Yeah.
It had already taken place a year earlier. Uh-huh. He was getting ready for this next ride. So he would give me, we'd have conversations about these amazing events and people. And I got, it was like telling a story in a way that was, I want to say this is like an adult fairy tale.
Right.
Here's a guy.
Right, right.
You know,
right. No, I get it.
Takes time off work, gets on a bicycle because he feels like he has to do it, and I get that. And he rides 2,300 miles in 21 days or less, and he meets all these incredible people. It's like the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
He's like the Wizard of Oz. Yeah. He's the David of Oz.
But also, I mean, the bike ride is also a metaphor for the journey that we're all going through. I mean, that's what is so good about the way in which the book is written, 21st Century Dads. David, what's next for you?
Well, that's interesting. A lot of people want to know what the next Dad's Honor Ride 2017 is going to be like.
Yep.
And there were some takeaways from the first ride. The first was that you don't have to ride 2,300 miles to get your message out. And, you know, if you were to take 3 weeks off of work, wouldn't it be nice to ride through some more densely populated areas? So we shortened up the ride for year two this year. And we went from Boston to Chicago. It was 1,400 miles, miles less. And we arguably went through some of the largest cities in America, Boston, New York City, Philly, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, et cetera. And it was easier to get our message out, and we had more time to get our message out since we were riding for 3 or 4 hours less a day.
Exactly.
So next year, if there is to be another Dad's Honor Ride, no guarantee, maybe it's 10 days. Maybe it's 1,000 miles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Make it more condensed, make it a little bit more meaningful. And what we found is that the shorter the distance each day, the more people are willing to participate. I didn't know what I was getting into. Riding 112 miles a day for 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
You know, is there a reason that no one agreed to sign up with me?
There are about 20 good reasons, David. There are about 20 good reasons. So, now, do you think if you do this shorter ride, you'll get John to join you on this thing? He's laughing.
I can hardly make it to the golf course, so we'll see.
Well, we've got a couple of ideas, and you asked, you know, going forward, you know, what to do. We'd like to do another Dad's Honor Ride because, to your point, Rick, it's a metaphor for
the journey.
You've got your uphill days where you struggle, where you don't feel like you're making as much progress. It's hard. You've got your downhill days where, you know, you're zipping along, you got the wind at your back type of mentality. And then you've got your rainy days where it's just like, oh, I don't even want to get out of bed. I don't want to go to work. But, hey, you know, being a dad is a 24/7 type of commitment, right? You can't pick and choose the day you want to be a dad.
Yeah.
You have to show up, rain or shine, and, you know, be the best person you can be. Make as many good decisions as you can, and, you know, try not to have any regrets or many regrets. So along these lines, it would be great to, whether it's with riding or something else, come up with something that doesn't require a huge time commitment.
You know, right.
Maybe just a few hours at a time, as opposed to days or weeks or 3 weeks. And what if you didn't have to prepare for months and months to do something like an endurance ride? And what if you didn't have to raise $1,000 a day? Because that's basically what we're asking to do.
Yeah.
Take a week off, raise $5,000. And by the way, you need to be in pretty top physical condition if you're going to
ride. Yeah, no question. No question. I think your book, though, I think this book is going to have that kind of, I mean, it doesn't take, you know, you don't have to be an athlete to read this book.
And well, that was the whole idea.
Yeah.
People can read it and go on the ride without going on the ride. They can have this experience that David had and went through, and we captured it in a way, I think, that it brings these people and their efforts and the experiences he had into perspective. And that, to me, is the thing. These people that never make the headlines, as I said, but are doing this phenomenal work behind the scenes. And there were so many chapters that I was able to put together through working with David on Trail of Tears.
And you list in the back all these organizations. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a book that can, you know, be the start. And your resources guide in the back is very good, too. That, mm-hmm. I really like this whole fathering self-assessment tool that you can mm-hmm. access it.
I took the test, and I had to get crib notes and take it again.
Would you have David on the phone?
It's kind of like cheating, though.
Yeah, it would be like talking to your teacher doing the test.
He came up with the test. He wouldn't give me the answers, but I wanted to mention that next Saturday, David and I will be doing a book signing.
Oh, where?
In Lake Barrington, I believe it is, David, right?
Right, Pepper Park Coffee.
Pepper Park Coffee. It's this great coffee shop, and it's not far from where David lives. And so they were so nice. Kathleen Scott is running the place out there, and they're opening the doors. So from 1:30 to 3, we'll be signing books and talking about all this in Lake Barrington.
Oh, that's
Lake
great, because you guys, you know, yeah. John, you I know. David, I don't know you personally, but you guys have done a remarkable job here. It's a very powerful narrative and a extraordinarily powerful message in this age where, you know, everything is becoming, you know, the whole notion of communicating is icy.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Tweeters and text messages, and that's not the way that fathers
and things
and
don't
sons,
change through tweeting. I'm here to tell you. And I text. I don't tweet.
Okay.
I text my kids goodnight to this day every night. Whether they answer or not, that's up to them, but it's for me.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to leave you with this, and you can finish up, because it's your show, right?
No.
Okay.
It's everybody's show.
Yeah. You know, John Power is our friend who wrote so many great
wonderful
books.
Wonderful. Black Catholic.
Absolutely.
Patent leather shoes really reflect up.
Just an iconic guy.
Wonderful guy.
Passed away in 2013, and I was writing this one chapter about connecting with your kids, and it was like John was standing right next to me. I'm telling you, Rick. And I went and looked at some of his videos, which are still online for some reason, on his website.
Sure.
Website. I mean, you can't hire him.
He was a very powerful speaker.
He's an amazing guy.
Yes, he was.
And there was this one line in there in the video. He was talking about his grandfather who said, and I quote, "You're never really an adult until you consider all the children of the world yours."
Oh, wow.
And that went right. And I remember we got to include this, so I got permission to put his little talk and stuff. But it's that kind of mindset.
Yeah.
Which changes things now. Yeah. What you see in the news isn't going to change things, but that kind of mindset that they're all our kids.
Yeah.
And if not, why not?
John St. Augustine and David Hirsch, the co-authors of 21st Century Dads, they've got a cool website. It's the number 21stcenturydads.org. John, always good to see you.
Good
David,
see you, Rick.
Nice to meet you. You've got a great message here, and it's powerfully told. Powerfully told.
Rick, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Great success with the book and the message, man. That's what it's all about, the message. We'll be right back.